Are you having a Labor Day weekend? Have you been enjoying this time of year? I sure am. The days are kind of slow. It's like the season's winding down. I like watching the leaves change color, though it is pretty quiet with all the birds migrating now. Not too much bird song around my house. What's it like at your house? You're listening to KGVM, Bozeman, Gallatin Valley Community Radio, 95.9 FM. And maybe you're streaming at kgvm.org. This is Desert Oracle Radio Replay, and I'm Roxana. It might be raining as you're listening to this, but we had plenty of evenings this week when it wasn't raining, and on one of those, I really enjoyed taking a short walk around that time of day when I guess it's a part of twilight, and the sky is kind of silvery blue, and the trees were all in silhouette. I looked up, and there was a bat flying the same direction I was walking. He was flying above my head. I'm always happy to see the bats. But I also realized that to be walking at that time of night is not the smartest thing to do in my neighborhood. There have been black bears around, and of course, the moose wanders through every now and then. We've been seeing elk in the backyard too, along with all the mule deer and whitetails. But it is a nice time of year. And if you don't let it get you down, it can be pretty soothing. As I'm recording this, I'm watching a woolly bear caterpillar crawl across a big flat rock about 10 feet from me. That's one of the signs of this time of year, and one of the other signs is the raptors that are migrating. I talked a little bit about that last week, and actually last weekend I went out to the Gravelies with an Audubon group to count raptors out there, and there were lots and lots of red tails, but we saw other kinds too. But you know, the conversations in the cars going out there, because I was in the car with about seven other people, and I always find those conversations fascinating. And I got to hear a mountain lion story. One of the people in the car not only had experienced a mountain lion tracking him for about an hour. He didn't discover this until he backtracked and saw that that mountain lion had followed his tracks with its prints. He also had an encounter, well, I think you could call it an encounter with a mountain lion. He was camped out with his family in a tent, and his dogs started getting very upset, and they could hear a mountain lion very near walking around the tent and growling. And it did move away eventually, so there was no harm in that incident, which is good for both the mountain lion and the people. And mountain lions are a rich part of our environment where we live here in Montana. I'm very grateful they're here. And they play a bit of a part in the episode of Desert Oracle Radio that we're going to be listening to. The episode is called The Dowsing Rod, and it was produced just after the hurricane on August 25th, 2023. By Ken Lane. Enjoy.
Check it out. Transmitting from the Mojave Wilderness in Joshua Tree, California, now is the time for Desert Oracle Radio, the voice of the desert.
Night has fallen on the desert. Where, despite several days of concern from the national media, the desert remains the desert. Whether the flooding caused by Hurricane Hillary was especially severe will depend, of course, upon your specific location and your specific knowledge. People who've long lived in the desert know that when a lot of rain comes down in a hurry, roads wash out and you learn about the latest failures on your roof. It's the nature of the desert. It's why there are enormous fan-shaped washes easily visible from every canyon opening from here to West Texas. It's why Caltrans snowplow trucks are deployed to the east side in the summertime to clear the mud and other debris. Beer cans, pinyon trees, pickup trucks, entire cows, unearthed human skeletons, etc. And all that comes racing down in great churning torrents of watery mud every time a thunderhead breaks over the hot ground beneath. When you call a water witch to your land to place a well, long before the witch reaches for his or her dowsing rod, they go to the visible washes, because the water is generally underneath the washes. That's where it seeps down and collects after those cloudbursts. The water can be a lot of places underground, but the washes are always a good place to start. It's how the ancient Persians brought water to their palaces and cities by running irrigation pipes from those mountain washes. No water on the surface, but they knew there was plenty underneath. Have you ever seen a water witch at work? It's a beautiful thing to behold. We have ancient reserves of great power within us. The first water witch I met was 40-odd years ago in the backcountry of San Diego County. There was a guy named, Larry or something. Mortimer, maybe. Maybe it was a biblical name like Hezekiah. Well, Hezekiah pulls up in a beat-to-hell old pickup with a ladder rack and tool bins. No hubcaps on the wheels, the late 70s two-tone paint faded down to one. As in all rural intercourse, there was initially some laconic discussion of various things that had nothing to do with the task at hand. Did you hear about the Granger supply in Santee? I guess it's moving to El Cajon. It looks like that Indian casino might be approved for Pine Valley. That sort of thing.
Ah!
A big middle-aged cowboy-looking dude in work boots and sagging Lee jeans. He lit a cigarette and squinted at the land going up toward the hill, and he sniffed, like a horse does when it's surveying the trail ahead. After walking around for 10 minutes or so, smoking and gesturing with one hand and the dowsing rod swinging low in his other hand, he suddenly stopped and the conversation stopped. I fell back with the landowner. It was a natural and automatic reaction. We did not speak. We did not watch him. We were looking around in the other direction, watching a couple of buzzards soaring in lazy circles high above. I don't remember much about the dowsing rod. It was a willow branch, I think. But in time since, I've seen other kinds. I've met some other water witches. And I've seen their dowsing rods vary from a jerry-rigged contraption made of copper pipe with a length of wood connected by a rusty spring, to one that was sort of overdoing it with the New Age decorations, including a hawk feather. But this one was just a branch, as far as I could tell. Well, he circled around this one area for a bit and then headed to another, and we'd just sort of glance in his direction every now and then. So I missed when he hit water, just heard him holler back at us. Here you go.
Destruction and death descend on 5 Southern California counties. Tons of water submerged 30,000 square miles of populous beach and valley towns in the Los Angeles area, leaving 200 persons dead or missing. With property damage estimated at $25 million, what once were streets and boulevards now are raging torrents of swirling floodwater. Persons are reported homeless as the tide undermines dwellings. The specter of disease hovers over the area as sewage systems burst with a rushing water that carries all before it. Railways and all other means of communication are out of commission in the worst storm ever to hit Southern California. Long Beach is under the rush of water that swirls toward the ocean. Pathé staff photographer Mervyn Freeman brings exclusive pictures of destruction riding the flood as a North Hollywood bridge falls victim to the elements.
Here you go. That's all he said. So we met him at the spot, which did not look any different than the 10 acres of scrub brush around it. Well, what do you think? The property owner asked him. It's up close, I'd say 40 feet. The water witch had some survey ribbons in his pockets, and he pulled one out and he tied it around scraggly sage, and that was that. Well, later I heard that the well driller hit water at right about 40 feet. Good clear water. This is Desert Oracle Radio with soundscapes by Red, Blue, Black, Silver. The issue with these floods, whether from a rare hurricane or the usual summer monsoons, is not with the desert itself. The desert's fine. It's with the human-built infrastructure. So the interstates flood, the railway lines flood, boulders roll down to the roadways, the telephone poles might get knocked down. Maybe an Airbnb explodes. A real tragedy, a whole bachelorette party. It takes a couple of days or weeks or months for the people and their machines to push all that stuff out of the way. Clean up the mud, push back the flows, patch up that chunk of asphalt that washes away every couple of seasons. Half the roads in the Mojave Wilderness got washed out during last week's storm. They'll patch up the crucial ones first, the ones that connect the commuters to their jobs and the consumers to the stores and the casinos. And in time, they get around to the others, like a scenic route around the quiet side of some public lands, a state or national park. Is really what you need to consider when you're hearing about storm damage. The damage is just to some stuff we built. We the people. And that stuff is generally under-maintained and in need of replacement anyway. Or it's ugly, and just let it go. Better yet. Besides, you can always get wherever you need to go on a horse. Or on foot, although you will need to walk at night if you don't want to die in the summer sun. And night has its own special conditions. Night is the time of the night stalker. The mountain lion, especially, the night stalker supreme. I only see the signs of the big cat day to day. One of those massive prints in the still damp sand after a summer rainstorm. or the discarded leg of a bighorn. Sometimes the dog will trot out from under a big juniper with a hoof sticking out of his mouth, the leg dangling out the other side. Just the lower part, no meat on there, all gristle and hide and bone. And you are reminded. It was sad when the cougar who unwillingly carried the bureaucratic designation P-22 was killed by its captors. Under fluorescent lights, apparently as an act of mercy. This was last December in Los Angeles. And should not that great animal have died on a mountaintop watching the sunrise? What is wrong with people? They make cuddle buddy stuffed animals and fundraising t-shirts and coffee shop murals out of the image of P-22 to celebrate its life. They make it a little friend, the animal pal, an anime furry speaking baby nonsense on social media accounts. The mountain lion will avoid you in almost all circumstances. It will see you. It will avoid you. But the only other time it will give you consideration is when it kills you. Because you are just what nature ordered for a big hungry cat who maybe missed a couple of meals because of people just like you. People driving cars and semi-trucks at night. Waiting in a line of headlights at the National Park gate to watch the meteors. Which is a fundamental misunderstanding of where the meteors are. Etc. Some people run outside with the iPhone or the rifle every time an animal just tries to slip by in the night. Its presence caught by the $30 Bluetooth night vision security camera surveillance device glued to the front door. So the deer run off and the cougar goes hungry again, and now it's got to get across the highway dividers and the barbed wire and hope to maybe get something later. Maybe a cottontail or something. Maybe you, why not? They are beautiful, like all predators. But they are not cute. They are killers. That's their mission. To kill other animals and to control a large territory, P-22 may do in 9 square miles of mountain and canyon surrounded by 8-lane freeways. Although its necessary territory should have been more like 300 square miles. We honor them by fearing them, by getting out of their way. You fear the cougar out of respect, as you also understand that its health and vitality is the measure of health and vitality for the place where you exist, yourself included. You and where you live. It does not say funny things. It does not reference the Barbie movie on social media. It prowls. It stalks. It breathes the cold air of the mountain night. It slips into caves in hot summer, waiting and watching. Fear it, because it is divine, full of wrath and beauty and danger and dignity. Dear Desert Oracle, I was surprised to hear you say that you are optimistic about the future. What is there to be optimistic about? Seems bad to me. All right, I'm gonna address one of these letters. An email, in this case, because I get a lot of them, and I'd rather not, you know? It's depressing. I'm not here to convince you or anybody else. I'm not your life coach, not your therapist. This program is for entertainment purposes only. No warranty is implied. Now, sometimes people will get mad at this radio show because they imagine that the situation that provides the material is impossibly different than their own life. These complaints invariably come by email or comments on the internet, podcast reviews, that sort of thing. The internet breeds hostility and grudges and ignorance. An unhealthy environment for one and all. Luckily, it's all breaking down so quickly that we can pretty much ignore it from here on out. When's the last time you searched for even some basic fact and got that result first, or even within the first page of results? Pick up an encyclopedia set from the thrift store, the used paperback shop, if you still got one around, whatever sort of Sanford and Son junk shop that's likely the last surviving business in a half-mile strip of abandoned retail. See if they'll throw in a Bible and the collected works of Shakespeare, and you'll be better off than 99% of your demographic, whatever it may be. The vinyl record fetishists will spend $35 on some bad soft rock album and leave entire bins of dollar classical records. Get the latter. What were we talking about? Optimism. I believe there's a real chance to be part of a world changing for the better, away from this technological and economic suffocation. A world removed and revived and released from the cruel erasure of human enchantment, human understanding of the sublime. The world's population is peaking a half century early. There are plagues and troubles to come, along with the passing of the biggest generation known to humanity. But on the other side, there is light. Already the cracks are everywhere, in everything. And as a modern poet said, that's how the light gets in. Enormous parts of America are simply vacant already. Small farms unprofitable to the machine, whole towns with social halls and festival grounds, all connected to the wider world for trade and culture, but easily defensible too. There's a reason those cheap houses accounts are so popular. Look around. See where you might have a more rewarding life. I am optimistic. I read about Chernobyl, how mankind's worst accident became a Garden of Eden in 30 years. Because we were not there, we meaning humanity in numbers. The time will come much sooner than the experts predict. The experts who have been wrong about all of their growth estimates. It's beautiful on the other side. And it's within reach now. You've been following the rules your whole life, a lot of you. How'd that work out? From Amboy to Zizek's and across the great Mojave Wilderness, you've been listening to Desert Oracle Radio. With soundscapes by Red, Blue, Black, Silver, and I'm your host, Ken Lane. On Saturday night, October 20, I will be bringing Desert Oracle Radio to the spooky old ruins of the Hot Springs Bathhouse in Hakumba, on the edge of the desert, Hakumba Hot Springs. That's about an hour east of San Diego, hard on the international border. There's lodging if you want it. I don't know any details. Give them a call. There's a bar restaurant that will be open. But this is a secret and holy show with none of the usual internet ticket brokers. Instead, I think they're going to ask you to drop some cash in the bucket, like you're at church, you know? You ever go to church? I don't know what it is. $20 donation or something? Don't worry about it. Thanks to everybody who supports this show on patreon.com/Desert Oracle. Thanks for subscribing to our pocket-sized print periodical at desertoracle.com. Thanks for your patience if you subscribed in the past week or two between COVID and the hurricane and the Desert Oracle storeroom flooding. I'm a little bit behind, but I'm catching up. Don't worry, I got everything to higher ground. Now I just gotta get it back in place where I can get to it. Good night from the Voice of the Desert.
I'm going to follow that up with a few facts about cougars, or mountain lions. Cougars are the second largest cats in North America. Cougars can jump 20 feet in the air. Cougars are incredible sprinters. I believe I read that they can travel anywhere between 30 and 50 miles a day. They hunt everything from moose to insects. And like a lot of cats, they hide and store their foods. Only female cougars are involved in parenting. Cougar cubs have blue eyes. Fully grown cougars have no predators except humans. The cougar population faces several threats, and these are usually have to do with habitat reduction. They are solitary and secretive animals. They are crepuscular animals, so they're most active at dusk and dawn. And the size of a cougar depends on the latitude of its location. Cougars are unable to roar. We got a little thunder coming in. The cougar holds a Guinness World Record, and I think that is for the number of different names that a cougar has. They have the biggest range of large animals in the continent. And let's see. The black cougar is a myth. And did you know that cougars, mountain lions, they have that characteristic kind of a scream of a call, but did you know they also whistle and chirp? Of course, raptors also have their whistles and chirps. Here's a broad-winged hawk. And then I'm going to have Steve Hoffman tell you a little bit about the broad-winged hawk and some other birds.
Midwest bird, forest bird. It doesn't breed in Montana. It doesn't breed anywhere in the American West, the U.S. West. It does breed a little bit in Western Canada, and that is the broad-winged hawk. And it is the smallest bugio that we see in Montana, and we mostly see it in the fall. We only count between 25 and 35 broadwings a season in the Brisbane. And then they're passing through from breeding areas in northern Alberta and northern British Columbia. Most of the birds that breed east of that go down through the Mississippi Valley. They don't come through here at all. So one of the interesting things, an adult broadwing hawk has these white and black bands on the tail. Very distinctive, really distinctive. The other thing, this bird really shows, see this black trailing edge to the wing? It's just very, very wide black trailing edge, and that's very distinctive as well. And these birds fly all the way to the Amazon basin in Peru and Brazil, Colombia. So they're South American wintering birds, but a few do winter in Central America and some even in Southern Mexico. But most of them go all the way to South America. And they breed as far as, you know, Eastern Canada and up into to as far north as northern Alberta and northern British Columbia in the west. But they are really, really cute little small beauty. And here's the thing about broad-winged hawks, is they form huge flocks when they migrate. And at the end of September, when I go down to Veracruz to take people bird watching down there, we spend some time watching the largest migration known on planet Earth in central Veracruz, right near the Gulf of Mexico. And the birds, when they're migrating that far to South America, they really need to conserve energy. So they're really looking, these birds are looking for thermal lift. The mountains are all covered, it's still the rainy season down there in the late summer and fall. So they're not gonna get any lift in the mountains because it's raining. So they have to go to the coastal plain to get the sunshine, and they concentrate in huge flocks. You can see flocks of 10 or 20 or 50,000 birds. And we count 1.5 million broad-winged hawks in Veracruz every fall, somewhere in that neighborhood. We've counted as many as 2 million. We also count about 1.5 million to 2 million turkey vultures, and about 800,000 Swainson's hawks, and sometimes as many as 300,000 Mississippi kites come through there as well. Plus sharpshins, coopers, ospreys, kestrels, merlins, peregrines, all those can also go through there. So this is just a spectacular sight. And you can see some of this in the eastern United States in the fall. At Hawk Mountain, sometimes big flocks will go through like this. So the red-tailed is probably one of the easiest of the bugios to identify because it's got the dark head, it's got a light chest, it's got a nice little band across the belly here usually. So dark, light, dark. And then it's got these light scapular patches on the back. And even the juveniles have that. And so if it's got these two white areas on the back of the wings when it's perched, that will help you with identification as well. The Swainson's doesn't have that. The rough-legged may have it somewhat, but it's not as prominent. And of course, the Frusus doesn't have it at all. And neither does the broadwing really have a distinct scapular patch, light patch, like this. This is pretty obvious here, too. By the way, do you notice the difference in the eye color here? So in all bugios, the young birds have a light eye. And that gets darker over the next couple years. And all adult buteos, that are particularly ones that are at least 3 years old, their eyes are dark. And they sometimes, I think, keep getting darker as the bird gets older. So it's kind of cool. So this is your textbook red-tailed hawk light morph with the dark head, the light chest, the dark belly, the red tail, the dark patagial line here. Very distinctive. None of the other birds have that at all, like that. Contrasting with a much lighter wing lining around it. Okay? And of course, all the buteos have long, fat wings and short tails. They're built for soaring in open country, primarily on thermals. Now, the broadwing is primarily a forest bird, but it will still soar above the treetops sometimes as well. And it soars a lot when it migrates, of course. So the dark, light, dark is a really good thing to look at when you're going 75 miles an hour down the highway. And it's birds. Now, the thing about red tails, there are different subspecies and different color morphs. And the Harlan's hawk is a northern bird that breeds in interior Alaska and northwestern Canada, but it winters here in Montana and elsewhere in the west. And most Harlan's hawks are of the dark morph, but they have a lot of white in the tail, usually, the adults. The juveniles may not have much or any white in the tail. But there are also light morph Harlan's, and they can be a challenge to identify, and I've only seen a couple of those in my life. But one of the things I do want to look at, again, these light scapular patches on the back of a perch red tail form a V on the back, okay? So that's something always to look for, as well as the red tail.
I'm about to walk into a sound exhibition at Tin Works, and if you've never been to Tin Works, you gotta go. So here we go. I guess jets could fly over the prairie too, though that's not part of the exhibit. But I'm not going to give away a very unique part of this little enclosure. But if you haven't come and experienced it, please do. It's just a part of a whole exhibition called Invisible Prairie at Tin Works Art. And we're going to find out more about that right now. There we go.
Is that, yeah.
No, that's fine.
That's okay?
Yeah.
My name is Angela Yonke, and I am doing community outreach and education for Tin Works Art. You were just in the Acoustic Atlas room, and Jeffrey Rice is the recording artist who has taken samples throughout different prairie locations across the country. And he's very interested in how the proximity of the microphone to the subjects can help make that experience more immersive and transportive in your mind. That's one of the things that he was aiming for. So there's bison, insects, birds, plus some of the unseen aspects of the prairie, like weather, that don't necessarily have a visual marker, but are a really influential part of the prairie and how the land is shaped. So there's a rainstorm, there's lightning, there's thunder, there's wind. And in that room, we also have an upside-down prairie. So we foraged prairie plants from one of the prairie locations outside of Livingston, Montana. And then it also, and it's upside down from the ceiling to kind of make the space more inviting. And some of those sounds can be startling to kids to make it a little less empty inside there. And then it also adds this whole olfactory component to that experience in that room, which is really fun.
Now that you mention it, yes, I remember that.
Yeah.
Could you tell us more about the whole Invisible Prairie project?
Absolutely. It's a exhibition of 9 different artists, multimedia artists. As TinWorks, we're a nonprofit, and we're focused on immersive, inclusive contemporary art projects and installations. So this year, our curator, Dr. Melissa Reagan, she's a professor of art history at MSU, she created the show and asked these artists to be a part of it. It's all about the unseen and hidden aspects of the prairie and a sensory experience of the prairie. So typically you view the prairie from a distance, like through a photograph traditionally or a landscape painting. And we're trying to communicate prairie without necessarily picturing the prairie. So there are very few actual images of landscapes. Instead, they're close focus views. We're trying to bring the prairie into close view because it's a critical landscape for soil health, carbon sequestration, a biodiversity corridor. It is very rich and biodiverse and complex, but you only can see that upon close observation and careful listening. So bringing it up to that close focus helps immerse you in that experience. And it also talks about some of the things that are overlooked. So stories, family histories, heritage, travel, nomadic stories that are part of the prairie but don't have like a landmark that you can go to look at. So the sensory experience helps you situate yourself within that landscape. And that's what Invisible Prairie is a lot about.
And what hours are you open for the public to come visit?
Absolutely. We are open Fridays and Saturdays, 10 a.m. to 6 p.m., and Sundays from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. We also have several events that support the exhibition. So we have drop-in children's programming. All of those days we're open. And you can do art projects, go through interactive science and art stations. We also have an open house once a month. Our next one is going to be on September 18th. It has a band, a food truck, and we have a beer sponsor every open house. So there's free drinks for those who are old enough. September 15th. I said 18th. Our last one of those is going to be October 14th. That's our closing day. In the morning, one of our artists is going to be performing an interpretation of their piece. So it's a musical visual score, and it will be performed during the eclipse, the partial solar eclipse, on October 14th in the morning. And then we'll have a day of the exhibition being open and a closing reception with a band, food truck, and drinks.
Thank you.
Absolutely.
TinWorks Art has some special events going on. On Friday and Saturday, September 8th and 9th, from 4 to 6:30 p.m. on Friday, and from 1 to 3:30 p.m. on Saturday, there will be an Insight Theater performance. Now, you do need tickets for that. So you can go to their website to get tickets. I think the reason for the tickets are because of limited space. So I hope you can make it. On Thursday, September 14th, from 7 to 8 p.m. at the Rialto, there's going to be a Lakota Nation versus U.S. film screening with intro by TinWorks artist Laylee Long Soldier. I think that one you might want to register for too. It says, please RSVP. And also at Tin Works, there is they regularly do live music, free drinks, and food trucks from 6:30 to 8:30 p.m. at 719 North Ida. On September 15th, they'll have Stormgrass and I think Zesty Bev, which I think is Zesty Brew Beverages, and then CC Gourmet will be the food. And that's Tin Works Fridays, so go out and enjoy that if you get a chance. You can get more information about the Tin Works Art events at www.tinworksart.org. Coming up next weekend, September 10th, and that's a Sunday, from 1 p.m. to 4 p.m., is the Bozeman Out of the Darkness Community Walk 2023. It's going to be held at Lindley Park, 900 East Main Street in Bozeman. And if you want to register for that walk, it is www.afsp.org/Bozeman. Just a little more about that. Bozeman's 8th annual Out of the Darkness Community Walk for the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention is sure to be a day of unity, support, and growth. We can and will be a community that's smart about mental health. My family has been touched by suicide, and I bet you or maybe someone you know has been touched by suicide. So this is something we can actively do to help make things a little better in the future. And the Gallatin Watershed Council is sponsoring a cleanup on Saturday, September 9th from 2 to 4 p.m. Please reach out to conservation at gallatinrivertaskforce.org to volunteer with the Big Sky-based Gallatin River Task Force. The fall Gallatin Watershed Cleanup will be followed by a celebration at Lindley Park. They will have snacks, drinks, and prizes. And it is a lot of fun. I think sometimes they have some live music going on there, too. So you might want to look into that. It's a fun day working out there with some other people who care. My thanks to Sacagawea Audubon and to Steve Hoffman for the Raptor education and to Tin Works Art for their wonderful work in the community. And thank you to everyone for listening. Hey, please call or text me and leave me a message about anything on your mind. The number is 406-404-6246. Remember to spread the word. You can hear this program on the air at 95.9 FM Bozeman Community Radio, or you can stream it online at kgvm.org at 7 p.m. Sunday and 9 a.m. Monday. Our past Desert Oracle radio replay episodes are also available on demand on the kgvm.org website. Well, that's it for today. So till next time, be safe, stay well, and sweet dreams. Garth Stevenson takes us out today with the song Earth from his album Flying. Enjoy, and happy Labor Day.